ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Well, that is a practical demonstration. Anyway, I mean, if a devotee is just sitting and chanting, that there's no, it's not seen whether he's actually dedicated to Krishna or not. But practically all the great devotees, their greatness is shown in the difficulties they accept in Krishna's service. That demonstrates the level of love. It's easy to say, I love you. But it's actually previously it only came up with the movie industry that people started saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. Previously it wasn't there. They just loved each other, that's all. They didn't talk about it much. But nowadays it's, I love you, I love you, I love you. And as soon as there's a little difficulty, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. Actually, in Islam you have to say talak, 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 three times. So that shows the greatness. There's an example given in Shastra that just as sandalwood pulp, sandalwood, the more you rub it, the sweeter the smell. And gold, the more you burn it, the brighter it becomes. And rock candy, one kind of sugar, the more you pound it, the sweeter it becomes. So similarly, devotees, the more difficulty they're put into, the more their bhakti becomes manifest. And actually, yes, pain and suffering is there on one level. But jato deko vaishnave babaha duk nischoy janeho taha parananda shuk. We don't have any difficulty. We're just given garlands, that's all. What do you think, Manida? You right? What are you like? Be out on the street having the kami spitting on your face or being garlanded? Because this jato deko, yeah, as much as we presume that the Vaishnavas are suffering, that much they're actually enjoying transcendental bliss. It's not that the suffering on one level isn't there, but the more it's there, the more they take shelter of Krishna and they experience transcendental bliss, which totally overrides the suffering on one level. Just like I just asked Manidhar Prabhu, and it's not a joke. He's experiencing Krishna and experiencing the ecstasy of serving Krishna like that. If you ask anyone, what would you prefer, to be seated in an assembly, or given respect, offered flower garlands, or be out on a cold street with people cursing at you and spitting in your face, who would choose the second? In every way, the second position is full of suffering, whereas the first position is, it appears to be a very attractive proposition. We're not saying it's bad, but from at least materially judged, it's certainly a much more favorable situation. But vipada santuta shashvat tatra tatra jagadguru bhavata darshanam yatsyat apuna bhava darshanam. What's the translation of this? I think Ramona Devi Dasi also knows. Is she here?
Yeah, Ramona's now.
I told her to learn this. Yeah, she's praying, Dear Lord, please give me more difficulty. Everyone goes to him and prays, remove all our troubles. But she's saying, give us more trouble, because if we have trouble, we remember you more. And by remembering you more, then we become freed from all troubles eternally. So it requires coming to the spiritual dimension to understand this. From the material point of view, it's not understandable at all. That we find also, just like at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, there was Kolavecha Sridhar, who was very poor, and all his neighbors were saying, what's the use? You're worshipping Vishnu, what's the use? You're just miserable and wretched, you have no money. And we're worshipping Durga and getting plenty of material opulence. What's the use of your worship? It's completely useless. They couldn't understand at all. Okay, next question. This could be a whole book, but like any questions. Next question.
For Manidhar Prabhu. Would you send your child to Gurukula and to be sure that it will be raised properly. Theory is one and practical life is another thing. Is there any Gurukula for which you can say that in it things are properly managed?
I guess everybody knows how much Srila Prabhupada wanted our children being raised in a Gurukula. He was very proud of our Gurukula in Dallas. He mentioned it many times. And now today we are only left to speculate, what would he say today? Would he still be proud of our Gurukula? So I can comment on this only from the point of view of a practically onlooker. Or from outside. I was never a Gurukul teacher. I was never in the Gurukul involved. Still, I got a pretty close look at the Gurukul, especially in India, in Mayapur, through my adoptive son. Actually, I have a son, adoptive son from Bengal, Vedasara Prabhu, who was growing up in that Gurukul and later on even became in charge. He's a Bengali boy. Actually, he's from Assam, who left his family by the age of 5. Because he heard that word Mayapur. So he asked, where is this Mayapur? He loved the word Mayapur. So they told him, ah, this is far away, this is in Navadvip. So he got it with the borrowed money from his brother, got on a train and got out in, I think, this is Krishnagar.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the train, got a rickshaw which stopped just in front of the gate of ISKCON Chandradaya Mandir Mayapur. So he walked into the gate, you know, in Mayapur, and they took him into the Gurukul, and that was his home. What happened thereafter wasn't always so nice. Still, it's his home, but he doesn't have always only good memories. Today, certainly, it's better due to very painful experiences from the past. So, if you want my... I mean, I can answer the question in principle, or I can ask if in subjective. Who is asking this? I mean, I made little research on my own on Gurukulas. And I can only recommend any parent who is seriously interested to put his child in Gurukula to make a very detailed research. Who is teaching there? Are the children living there? Who is the director of the school? What is the curriculum of the school? Then depends on you what you expect your child to be. And also I think there's quite a difference if it's a boy or a girl. Prabhupada didn't recommend some high upgraded education for girls especially. He recommended they should stay actually at home and learn from the mother. He was not at all fond that the devotees embark on some academic career. If you want to know more details, I can dig out. I have an exchange Prabhupada discussing with those days, 1973, something like that, with the two Gurukula directors from Vrindavan, from Mayapur, discussing how the education should look like for the children. And just in these 45 minutes, you will realize that Prabhupada, his major focus was not on academic education, but on the formation of character, resulting in the simple fact that such a trained student should surrender to the guru. That's the meaning of Guru Kula. It's not the, you know, Freud Kula. It's not the social Kula. It's not the mathematics Kula. It's a Guru Kula. So, so we have to judge carefully what we want our child to be. Now, I could honestly tell you, I didn't find too much on that line, Guru Kula. But I don't want to make a judgment here, like a heavy judgment. Please, if you are interested, to make your own research. But never underestimate that the major educational institution for the child are the parents. No amount of education can replace the parent house. That doesn't mean you keep your children at home and sit on them. But the home should provide a solid basis for the child. When my daughter was born, not only one, but several devotees told me, she is very lucky. I asked, why? She said, because she will know who the father was. This is Kali Yuga. Therefore, there's no need to discuss what kind of gurukul we put our child in if the parent house is in a desolate condition. I would say, if somebody wants to know more, and this, I would, then he can, should turn to me personally on a private level. Because it depends really on devotee, on his situation. Maharaj, you want to add something?
Many things, but let's go on to the next.
Okay.
I've talked about these things many times. I will do, but there are many other questions.
Yeah.
For a question for Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, I always appreciate it, and I am appreciating now your work and mission for Srila Prabhupada. There is two questions, actually, so I will read both. First question, I humbly beg you to tell us what is your relationship to Bhakti Tirtha Swami in connection that there was some nesuglasice, kako je to prevod? Disagreements with him. Question number two, how much and whether at all disciples and devotees should be engaged in disagreements which gurus have between them, because there was even accusations or judging gurus from side of disciples and making etiquettes that guru is not bona fide and so on. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Bhavata Das. I will translate now to Croatian.
My relationship is that we're both spiritual sons of Srila Prabhupada. Personally, between us, at least at this point in time, it's a bit messy. I know there's been lots of things said about this. I'll try and summarize the whole thing from the standpoint that, of, well, my own standpoint. Maybe about 3 years ago, I saw this one book that Maharaj had written, in which there were some statements which I found I considered to be inappropriate for a Vaishnava preacher. They could be highly misleading. And probably most of you know what those statements are, and if you don't, there's no need for you to know what they are. There's no need to say anything. So when I met him next, I discussed this with him, and he was saying, well, it's just a preaching technique. But I said that, well, if you don't make it very clear that it's not actually, you don't actually believe this, then people are going to think that it's actually true. So I wasn't satisfied with our discussion. We had more email exchange, and then we had some GBC, what's it called, sponsored or organized mediation. After which he agreed to make some statement that this actually, some of the statements that he made weren't actually factual, which I felt was very much needed, because otherwise there's a tendency for people to just blindly follow. Anyway, somehow or other that never happened. By the way, this was all going on privately for many months, and then there were some other statements which came out that Maharaj had made regarding homosexuals, and which again was, I found highly questionable. I know this may be, painful, but you asked, so I'm saying. So I thought, what am I going to do now? Am I going to go to the GBC and it'll go round and round and in circles again for months, or what shall I do? So I made some public statements, and they were quite forthright.
Forthright, what that means?
Straightforward, unequivocal, frank, clear.
Direct.
Direct, okay. That's another synonym. And just about this time I came to Zagreb and I gave a lecture which was more or less philosophical, and it became quite controversial. I was stressing the point that Guru must speak according to Shastra, must act according to Shastra. So anyway, I think you all know the history, more or less, what happened after that. There was, you know, there were quite a few things said. There was some propaganda that I'd called Maharaj a demon. Now, obviously, I don't remember everything that I ever said, but I'm pretty sure I don't remember saying that, and if I had said that, it's such a heavy statement, I think I would have remembered that I'd said it. I did quote, Ya Shastra Vidhi Mutsrija Vartate Kama Karataha Nasa Siddhim Avapnuti Nasukam Naparam Gatim, which Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita in the chapter describing the demoniac nature, that those who do not follow Shastra then and act according to their own whim, they attain neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. I definitely didn't say this publicly, because if I had, it would have been a major uproar. And, well, I may have said it privately, but I very much doubt it. I said like that. But then, you know, if everything everyone said about everyone privately was broadcast, then, you know, we'd all just faint, probably. So, that was it. After Maharaj became terminally ill, I wrote a letter to him saying that, you know, we had a heavy run in, and probably if you weren't in this situation, I'd still be contesting it with you, but as you're not, as you are in this situation, you know, I'm leaving it, and I wish you all the best in your onward journey. So, like I say, it's pretty messy. But although many devotees didn't appreciate it, I felt it was my duty to state that statements are being made which are not according to Shastra or Siddhanta, and coming from an acharya, it may be considered a preaching ploy, but it can be very dangerous also. So you asked me a difficult question. I'm going to ask you one now. I never asked any of the disciples about the Tirtha Maharaj before, but I'm curious to know. There are certain statements in his books which seem highly unlikely. What's your understanding of them? Do you accept them as true, or what are they? I mean, like UFOs coming from Mu, Atlantis and Mu. No, not planet. Atlantis is supposed to be a submerged continent.
Atlantis.
In the Atlantic Ocean. Supposed to be an imaginary. Well, it's supposed to be a continent in the Pacific. And some people have speculated that this exists because on the west coast of Africa and the east coast of South America, there are a type of rodent called lemurs. Lemur.
Type of?
Lemur. Rodent, like a rat. So someone speculated that previously the two land masses must have been joined together, but then what was in between dropped into the ocean, so that was called Lemuria, which became shortened to Mu. So Maharaj stated, not as a theory, I don't have a problem with Sadaputa giving, you know, he said, well, this is like this, and this may be like this. This has been observed, and according to the Vedic literature, it could be like that. But Maharaj had stated categorically that the UFOs are coming from Atlantis and Mu. So that was one of the statements I objected to, although there was others I objected to even more. So, you know, it wasn't a personal issue. It wasn't that I hated him, and I you know, I don't feel hatred towards anyone except maybe Sai Baba.
Palmaprati Sai Baba
and Ravi Shankar. You don't know all these people. Not Ravi Shankar, the sitarist. There's a new bogus guru in India who's become quite popular by the name of Ravi Shankar. Anyway, let's not pollute the atmosphere. So, but it was a philosophical issue because our devotees, we've seen like there was Kirtanananda and he had his Christian version of the Hare Krishna movement and people just blindly followed. And most of his disciples, just blindly followed him. Now, after the unfortunate fall of Harikesh, so many people came out and said, well, we knew he was having difficulties, and all the disciples said, well, why didn't you tell us? Now, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj passed away in a glorious manner in the association of devotees, hearing and chanting. But there was, anyway. Now, that's my question to you. Then, how are you, what do you think? Do you think it's your duty as a disciple to accept that as being all true? Should you accept it as true because Guru said, or should you check with the previous Guru and sadhus and Shastra? It actually puts the disciples in a very difficult situation. Anyway, maybe you can think about it, unless you want to reply now.
He said that he didn't notice this part about Mu and so on.
Oh. There was a whole book full of it. About angels and the world was ruled from Africa. Lots of unverifiable, statements. Anyway, I don't want to go on with this because Maharaj has passed away now, and what's the point? But as you asked me, I've given a brief reply. I apologize for causing pain. Yeah.
He said that he's not a disciple, but he wants to say something.
Mm.
One time when Bhakti Tirtha Swami was in Sarajevo, Daksha Prabhu, who was president of Sarajevo Yatra, he asked him, in what way should we study your books? And Bhakti Tirtha Swami said, no way. Srila Prabhupada's books are here to study them. I wrote my own books for public people. If I can help devotees, that is okay. But Prabhupada's books are here to study.
Okay.
Next question, you can answer if you like. More or less the same, you decide. For Bhakti Vikash Swami question, there was some disagreement between you and Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Was that on philosophical or personal basis?
Well, I, from my side, it seemed to be mostly, I took it as philosophical and he took it as mostly personal. That's how I see it. The two things merged. I mean, it's never the, in dealing personal dealings, philosophy, it's, we're not just dealing with concepts, we're dealing with people also. But, like I say, I pray that it wasn't just out of some envious motivation that I took this matter up. I say many devotees were, they didn't approve that, but many devotees also told me that they supported my points, but they didn't like the way I did it. But then I just wonder what way you're supposed to do it. Because, if you go through official channels, it just goes in some official bureaucratic circuit and goes round and round and round and nothing actually happens. So, at least the issue is there for anyone who wants to consider it philosophically. And in Vaishnavism philosophy, it's not just, like Manila Prabhu was talking about, armchair philosophers and Swedish philosophers.
Different.
So, because it's, for us, philosophy is not just some armchair speculation, but it's our very life. How do we understand Krishna?
This is the same question, actually. I didn't read it till the end, but you already answered that. So the first one was that, was it on philosophical or personal basis? And is it correct that you told that Bhakti Tirtha Swami is a demon?
No, I already discussed that.
Okay, next question for Manidhar Prabhu. Yes, all of us. For Manidhar Prabhu, what do you think? Should a woman with a small baby attend Mangal Arati? Did Srila Prabhupada said anything about that? Did you succeed in managing your life so that your wife in that time attends Mangal Arati?
Well, I can only be honest with you. I wouldn't be able to wake up my child by violence, by force, put it under a cold shower, drag it in a temple room.
In English you have to say her, if you don't mind.
Her.
Yeah, yeah.
In
English you have to say her, not it, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
It means like an object, an inanimate, like a block.
Well, it is like an object in that case.
At 4 o'clock in the morning.
4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
So, rather, I cannot quote myself as an example in that regard because I spent much of the time in the last 4 or 5 years during the growth of my child on traveling. By Krishna's mercy, Krishna arranged that actually I could take the family with me on traveling.
Krishna.
Otherwise, I would never see them. I was warned, especially lately, what it can result it can what the result it can have when you are grihastha and you don't have a contact to your family, even in the name of preaching. Personally, I feel that there is a difference in preaching when a grihastha is preaching, or a brahmachari is preaching, or a sannyasi is preaching. Only when you mix it up, then only confusion can follow. So our, you could say, sadhana evolves from the traveling. We just do the needful. Sometimes my Torah is the first one who gets up in the morning and is heading for the Mangalartik in a temple where we just park in front of the door. Sometimes I would have to drag her behind me on a rope, the Mangalartik or to the program. I'm not capable to do that because I want her to understand that Krishna consciousness is fun. If I don't transmit that and she doesn't like that, then I lost the whole thing. So the challenge is not how to get her to Mangalartik. The challenge is how to make her understand it's fun. Then she will probably drag me to Mangalartik. We are working on that. I don't have 100% success. And if some grihastha tells me he has 100% success, I think he's a liar. They are dealing with individual living entities. And if they get the idea that sadhana is something inhuman, then they will never do that. Krishna consciousness becomes for them some sort of a punishment. And for children who are not capable to think rationally, the challenge is how to create an atmosphere where they accept things emotionally. I like it or I don't like it. So how to make them to like it? So in that regard, if I would live in a community or something like this, it's very important that all the parents and children work in the same direction. Children, they have their own social system or social pressure system. They see this child goes to Mangalartik. Well, I want to do it too. So this is a work for the parents to create such an atmosphere. I cannot say we are succeeding here, but it's worth of it to try. Maybe it's not as clear answer as you expected, but it's very individual. As a boy is being whipped to the program in the school, Gurukula, you could say. Standing in front of the deities, you know, Govinda Madhipurusham, having a finger in the nose and fighting each other. Boys do that. Still, it's nice that we're in a temple, but the real choice for the child, if I want to do it, will come later. Now my Torah is just more or less going along with Krishna consciousness. That's what she knows. But how successful her sadhana was, you can ask me when she's 15 or 16 years old. Then she has to choose on her own. There are not many good examples. So I can only pray. We are realistic.
For Bhakti Vikash Swami, what do you think if some leader, grihastha, divorces himself, should he keep the position of leader? Can we see the divorce as a private thing of the certain person and that we should not interfere in?
I'm not sure, but I believe there's a GBC rule that you're not supposed to hold any position if you're divorced. Does anyone know about that? although I don't think it's strictly enforced. Such a matter is never simply a private affair, because man is a social animal. Yeah. And especially as Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, especially the actions of leaders tend to be emulated by others. I think my stance on divorce is, maybe not, but I think it's fairly well known.
I didn't hear.
My stance on divorce, I would guess, is fairly well known.
Fairly?
Well known. I'm not at all in favor of it. If you ask, what do you think? I mean, better, what does Prabhupada think? What, not what I think. We know that Prabhupada wasn't at all in favor of it, because it's against Shastra. In every case they say, well, you don't understand, it was very difficult, you know, particular circumstances. But Shastra doesn't allow it under any circumstances. So actually there are some circumstances in which Shastra, just like a woman is allowed to leave her husband if she finds out that he's a eunuch or a homosexual. So there are some grounds, but they're not much. Previously, it wasn't allowed by law, and it just didn't happen. Somehow or other, people went on. Now, yeah. But as Prabhupada wrote, that now it's allowable by law, that if there's any slight disagreement, then, or even not disagreement, just on whim, either the husband or wife can take advantage of the divorce laws, and it just creates social chaos. We may say it's a private affair, but devotees are as propagators of a religious path are public people. So who's, well, what kind of example are we setting for the public? If we can't, even the most basic part of human life, a man can't live with his wife, they divorce and then remarry, and the woman has two children from two previous marriages and one from a present marriage, and then you know, why should anyone want to take us seriously? We're talking a very high principle, you know, is transcendental lila and all this, but we can't even live like, you know, even many karmis, on they have better moral principles than us, so why should anyone take us seriously? So personally I feel that they, you know, we have all these new kinds of preaching and bridge preaching and, you know, yoga and all these, so many different things and high leelas, but really our leaders need to be preaching to get the basics together. It's going to be very, very difficult to spread this movement if our devotees, they just are so whimsical. I asked one temple president that, you know, why he's engaging. He's given some engagement to one man who, you know, a devotee who had just married someone else's wife. I mean, the marriage broke. Not that the husband cared that much, the ex-husband, which was why the wife also, she was anxious to find someone who cared for her. So she was quite happy to go along with the adulterous proposals of the man who eventually married her. That was a little complicated. Anyway, I asked why he was engaging this man who just divorced in a kind of scandalous, who just married a divorced woman in a kind of scandalous situation. He said he's enthusiastic to do service. How many people are there in the world like that? So there you have a dilemma. Yeah, okay. It's a big topic. I've discussed it many times. It must be in these MP3 CDs. You'll find it coming up again and again, because it's like a cancer in our society, and no one wants to operate. To blow on the boils, especially if there are children. It's very painful. But in the modern, it's very painful for the children. But in the modern age, we have the idea that what I should do, I should act for my own pleasure. We don't think of responsibility or setting a good example. In an age where killing one's own children is normal, giving them just a totally shattered life, that's also considered, you know, just for your own happiness. that's also considered normal. It would seem that, you know, however much, after doing that, however much you chant Hare Krishna and you, whatever else you do, it's going to be very difficult to get love of Krishna. Okay, you want to say anything about that? You do.
Excuse me?
You want to say anything about that?
Oh, there's so much to say.
There's so much to say.
Just very few minutes. I just remembered what Prabhupada wrote in Bhagavatam, that this movement, actually he dedicated a whole purport to this, that this movement is actually also meant to take care of lonely, rejected women coming from the Kami society. Now we are at the state, we don't have to wait for the rejected women coming from the Kami society, we are producing them on our own. It's by no means a private affair. There are not too many devotees on this planet, ISKCON devotees, really. So what one devotee is doing is affecting thousands of others. He doesn't have to be even that big leader. Just not controlling that little of sex life, he's hurting so many people, his friends, his other devotees. The damages are big.
I understand that woman has many duties, out of which there are also remaining faithful to the husband, no separation, and protecting the children. Which of these is more important to follow? If you tried but didn't manage to follow both, in the case of something wrong with the husband.
Actually, I'd just like to say something here, that in Vedic culture, it's principally the father and husband's duty to protect the children, not principally. The woman is protected by the husband, and he protects both the wife and the children. Not that it's principally her duty. It's her duty, but principally his. We hear a lot about the duties of women, but the duties of men should be considered very carefully also.
So I will read to the end.
Yeah, but to just translate that part which I interjected. Because the question itself bears a, you know, like a kind of misunderstanding.
Which of these two is more important? If you try but cannot manage to follow both, in the case of, I don't know, I cannot read this, but let's say in the case of an abnormal husband who's causing the children, even the wife herself sometimes, but causing the children to become averse to Krishna consciousness. If you can please shed some light on this topic.
I'll answer this at first. Okay. Many times husbands behave abnormally because their wives behave abnormally. Prabhupada discussed this many times in his purports. The wife, instead of trying to contest with the husband, if she serves him submissively, then he'll be satisfied. And more than once I've had couples coming to me and telling me, you know, they got a divorce, there's no other way. Or women coming and telling me that. Or women coming and telling, you know, my husband's just,
Ili,
can't take it anymore. So I just tell them, follow what Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam. Serve him very submissively. Even if he's unreasonable, be very sweet. Don't argue with him. Don't fight with him. Even if he's just totally outrageous, you just yes, 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 whatever he says. Do that for some time and then you see. And, I averted two divorces like that, where the couples are going on and, they're quite happy now. And actually, the women, they get whatever they want, but instead of like, it's a matter of subtlety, that instead of telling you have to do what I say, you just yes, 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 and then they're satisfied, and then you say, but by the way, and then I'll tell you one story. One devotee from India told me that one of his friends from Kami life, his sister, there was, as usual, arranged marriage, so, previously, they just used to meet on the wedding day. That would be the first meeting in an arranged marriage. Still nowadays, the vast majority of marriages in India are arranged, but usually they meet each other once and just see, you know, if they like each other a little bit. So this man's sister, there was like, she met the boy she was supposed to be married to before the marriage the one time. And he said, look, I know you're a modern, educated girl, but my outlook is very traditional. And I just want, in my home, you should just do whatever I say. And she said, you're my husband, and you know, you're my worshipable Lord, I'll do whatever you say. So when her father and brothers, she told that, they were, you know, they're afraid. You really want to marry him? And she said yes. So she got married and she went to his house, as is the custom. And after 6 months, she came back to her father's house. And they all asked, well, how is it? How does your husband deal with you? And she said, well, he just does whatever I say. Because it's she does whatever he says. Yes, and then the real things, she does. So this is the subtle systems. What is that? Lord Krishna himself talks about his devotees. Satpating satstriyang yata. Krishna says, I am controlled by my devotees just like a good husband is controlled by a good wife. Because they're very affectionate to me and they serve me they're very submissive to me and serve me with genuine affection. And they're really trying to please me, therefore I just do whatever they want. This is called culture. It's missing in the Western world. Prabhupada wanted us to have Brahminical culture, but we're still running on our Mlecha culture and wondering why we have so much mess. Still in this country, there's just the previous generation, there was no divorce, right? Catholic or in Bosnia, Bosnia is all mixed up, but anyway, the old culture was there. Now you're exposed to modern life and more advanced. Anything you want to say on that?
There's so much. I don't know how much time you have.
Yeah, we don't have much. We should finish soon, actually. Because there's tea, cake and tea, and then take rest, and then get up in the morning.
Two more questions there is.
Okay.
I don't know if this, as you suggested, that there should be also, today was like the Mataji Sangha session, maybe there should be a Prabhu Sangha.
No, that's what I said to you. The men need training as, definitely at least as much as the women. And people don't have any idea of how to live as human beings. Literally, really. You know, no one taught. Where do we get our role models from? From the TV or? Unless we very deeply study this Vedic culture, then we have to live according to some culture. And mostly our devotees don't study the books very deeply. Yeah. And even within our movement and at the fringes of it, there are some demons who are pretending to be devotees who say that Prabhupada didn't really know what he was talking about and he was a 19th century Bengali and all that he said about social issues, they don't matter because we know much better, and he was just a 19th century Bengali. So even we do read and we just throw all Prabhupada's social instructions out. And we end up with, you know, this super high level, discussing super high level intimate leelas and coming home and doing some Reiki and having some crystals and then having a divorce. And this is Krishna consciousness. It's just a mess. I mean, people say we're too narrow-minded and we're just following Prabhupada. But if we just narrow-mindedly follow Prabhupada, it'd be a hell of a lot better than all this broad-minded, integrating all this nonsense. Okay, I'm banned from Croatia for another year. Okay, there's another question.
Why is need of institute for punishing for someone who did some criminal work when such a thing happen to the victim because of the previous karma. So it is said that without Krishna's knowledge, not a blade of grass is moving. So everything what is happening, good or bad, is from Krishna. It's approved from Krishna. And still, even us, we blame the person who did it.
It's your turn.
Mine? I don't know if the author of this question is aware that it's loaded with Mayavada. I'm sure he didn't know that. Because the underlying tone is, let it be as it is, because it is this, as it be, so let it be. So first of all, to be punished, it's Krishna's idea. It's not, as we nowadays in modern terms, somebody say, you are judgmental. Don't be judgmental. Let it be as it is, because it is as it be, and let it be. That's not Krishna's philosophy. Krishna himself said, this is right and this is wrong, and this is the law which should be administered. So it's not my idea. And if you think, the person has already his karma, so why should I administer his, you know, why should I intrude into his karma? It will happen anyway. Well, being locked up in jail or being punished is his karma, yes. The jail is there for he can suffer his karma. So it's not in contradiction with Krishna's instructions. Same. But there must be right judges, brahminical judges, who can judge on the level of Guru, Shastra and Sadhu. If there is no such a judge, then there is a mess.
Yeah, I'll add more to that. The underlying presumption here is that everything is simply programmed, that we have no free will. That's not true. It may be true that we have a certain destiny to suffer due to our previous actions. That is true. But it's also true that the person who maybe stabs you, he has the free will to do so or not. By the very complex arrangement of material nature, Krishna puts together someone who has such a desire to be an aggressor together with someone who deserves it. But still, he's not... he has the free will to do so or not. If he doesn't do so, then you have to get your karma at some other time. Or you may take to Krishna consciousness or some other, or to some material pious activity by which you don't have to suffer that. The aggressor, due to the mentality, the sinful mentality he's inherited from a previous life, he may be as if almost forced to do so. But in human society, there are always persons who are giving instruction that this is right, this is wrong. So, it may be your destiny to be stabbed, but the person who stabs you also gets a sinful reaction for doing so. If it weren't so, then how could you get the karma to be stabbed if you were just a robot? You had to do something to get that karma. You had to misuse your free will to get that karma, that karmic reaction. As Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, he is upadrashta and anumanta. He sees everyone, he sees what they do, he sees their desire, and he gives facility for persons to pursue their desires. That doesn't necessarily mean he approves of everything they do. He gives instruction through Shastra and through sadhus, but if we insist on misusing our free will, then he also facilitates that. He doesn't force us to act rightly, because if he forced us, then it wouldn't be right. We'd just be robots. You said there's one more question?
Yes.
Okay.
What vision do you have of our movement in the next 5 or 10 years? Your desires and reality. Bhavada Das.
Well, I can answer that for Manidha Prabhu. It's not difficult.
I will translate this to creation.
Shall I
say? Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's a dream. But we are entitled also to dream. My dream is that ISKCON should be a movement based on book production and book distribution. And that would solve 99.9% of problems we are dealing with. Because when you have this in mind, then you will feel responsible towards this task, this mission. How can you produce and distribute these books when you don't try to live up to them? What are the book distributors supposed to do? They will go out and represent this movement. What kind of movement? We owe them to act in such a way they don't feel ashamed. And the book distributors are obliged to the book producers. The book producers are obliged to the temple managers. Everybody feels obliged to the other because he's a part of Srila Prabhupada's mission, and everything is geared towards this one thing, to spread Krishna consciousness in the most effective way, and that means to distribute his books. So it's not just the selling books. It's a whole culture coming along with that, which we have to try to live up to, so Srila Prabhupada is not ashamed of us. People get the book, they look at us, and they think this is a joke.
Should we follow you, or should we follow what's in your books?
That question shouldn't be there. It's just a dream.
My vision, well, it's in this book. And also that my memories of Prabhupada. But to a large extent, it's up to all of you. We can understand from reading Prabhupada's books what he wanted of us. It's up to each of us individually to take up the mission. And even more so in the present day ISKCON, where the movement has spread very widely, but the leadership to a large extent hasn't been able to keep up with the expansion. In Croatia, I mean, really there isn't, I'm not saying this is a criticism, but it's, you know, everyone can see there's no real guidance from a higher level. So it's up to you to take up the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Please do so. You know, we celebrities just come around and eat Mahaprasad and talk a little bit, but you're here. So the mission of Prabhupada is with you. So please take it up. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there now. You're saying there are going to be some Prabhu Sanghas also? No, but I'm suggesting that just like there's Mataji Sanghas saying what are the duties of women, what are the duties of married men especially.
I should just maybe mention this regard what this Mataji Sangha is about. It's not one Mataji sitting there and having a talk and the others listen. It's not like that. It's especially in a grihastha ashram, we could say misery likes company. So it's a sharing of problems and illuminating these problems from Srila Prabhupada's point of view.
Yeah, that's what I'm suggesting. It's very much needed.
Yeah, it's fine with me. I'm just here until Sunday.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. Okay. And
it got this special feature that when women are just together, then they are more free to speak. They don't feel ashamed in public. And when the men are just together, they also can speak more openly and freely.
It's a very sad situation in some places, in America, they don't even like to use these words Prabhu for men and Mataji. They don't like to use the word Mataji because they feel it's like a, what's that term? It's insulting term. What's the word?
Orthodox.
Not politically correct. It's I can't remember the word. But you know, that's unfortunate.
Just imagine, it would enforce in the Mataji, they should address the husband Swami. You know,
if we can make it so that there's, Swami doesn't mean like, you know, army, like in the army, but it's actually affection. I mean. Yes. We actually see that there are families who don't live by the principle of the battlefield. They live by they actually have affection, and that's required for children to grow up in that. We're talking love of God, but they don't even know what the perverted reflection is. You know? And they have no idea of what love, you know, any idea at all what love is. It was just like I was in Thailand for some time, where they have the heaviest kind of Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism. It's just complete Shunyavad. And if you say God, they have no idea of what, they have not even any concept of what you're talking about. It's like, you know, if you say God in Croatia, I mean, people have some really funny idea, but some idea at least, but in Thailand, they have no idea what you're talking about. So he's saying love of God. So if you have no idea what God is, there's no question. If you have no idea what love is, there's also no question. So, Hare Krishna. That's all for now. Do you have questions and answers again tomorrow night? You really grilled us tonight. But it's good, you know, let's discuss these things in a respectful way. There are many difficult issues and we want to, we don't want to just avoid them. So we could have this tomorrow night also, maybe this.
This talk.
All right, Hare Krishna. All glories to the assembled devotees.